I bet we've all had moments when someone in authority has told us to do something, and we scratched our head and thought, I'm not sure if that's the best approach. And I don't know if I should listen to that voice. Maybe you had a coach at one point, and it's 100 and whatever degrees outside in Texas, and it's the third practice of the day, and they want you to do another lap or another set of exercises, and you're thinking, if I do what this person is telling me to do, I'm going to get sick or pass out. Should I do this or not? Maybe you're at work or at school and a boss or teacher tells you to do something in a way that you know is going to take way too long. You know a better way to do it. It's more efficient, but they want it done their way, and you're thinking, well, I can do that, but I'm going to be here an extra 3 hours. I don't know if I should listen to this voice or do what I know is right. Maybe you've had an argument with your GPS. Watch this clip.
That is a very good point, Dwayne.
Make a right turn.
Wait. No. It means bear right.
No.
Up there.
It said right. It said take a right.
No. Look, it means go up to the right, bear right, over the bridge, and hook up with 307.
Make a right
Maybe it's
turn.
A shortcut, Dwight. It said go to the right.
It can't mean that. There's
Look,
a lake
right
there.
I think it knows where it is going.
This is the
lake. Machine
this
knows.
This is the lake.
Stop yelling at me.
No, it's
Stop
up there. There's no lake.
Here.
Remain calm. I have trained for this. Okay. Exit the window. Here we go.
Make a U-turn, if possible.
Look out for Leighton.
You sure you're okay?
Fine.
Good. That is what's most important.
Did you get the rental insurance? Because that is pretty important, too, at a time like this.
There are times when the, quote, official word doesn't line up with what you know to be true, and you have to decide, do I go along or do I trust what I know is right? In the second half of Acts 5, we see power breaking loose. There are apostles healing the sick and crowds gathering from all over Jerusalem. People are laying in the streets just hoping Peter's shadow might fall on them. And Luke tells us that multitudes of men and women are believing and being added to the Lord. It's wildfire. And the wildfire draws attention. Luke tells us this story in Acts chapter 5, beginning in verse 17. Then the high priest and all his associates, who were members of the party of the Sadducees, were filled with jealousy. They arrested the apostles and put them in the public jail. Now, these priests and associates, the ones from the Sadducees, they were among the most religious people in Israel. They were the guardians of the temple. They were the interpreters of the law. And instead of rejoicing at God bringing more people in, they feel threatened. And they put up a boundary, and they put that threat in jail. But during the night, an angel of the Lord opens the cell doors and tells the imprisoned apostles, go stand in the temple courts and tell the people about this new life. And at daybreak, the high priest, not knowing what's happened, sends for the apostles. And the guards go and they find the cell locked and the apostles gone. And someone says, look, they're right back out there. To me, it's almost like a cartoon scene. You know those times when Elmer Fudd would like chase Bugs Bunny into the hole and think he's got him trapped down there and he just appears right behind him? That's what's happening here. The priest has no clue what's going on. He's angry and he hauls the group of apostles back before the Sanhedrin and he says to them, we gave you strict orders not to teach in his name. Yet you filled Jerusalem with your teaching, and you're determined to make us guilty of this man's blood. His first question to them is not, how did you get out here? It's not, Seems like we have a double agent in the priesthood. That's not his concern. His concern is you're disobeying. And that's when Peter and the others drop this line. We must obey God rather than human beings. Now that phrase, we must, literally it's the word it is necessary for. He's saying it is necessary that we obey God rather than human beings. And when that phrase shows up in Scripture, the it is necessary phrase, it's kind of like a divine mandate. He's not just saying, well, it's important for us to. He is saying, because of our conscience and our faith and what God is commanding, we have to obey him and not you. When we hear Peter's words about obeying God rather than human beings, it might be that our minds first turn to things like civil disobedience, Thoreau's famous essay. He was, in 1946, thrown in jail overnight because he did not want to pay a poll tax that was funding a war he disagreed with. So he elected to disobey and spend the night in jail. And upon his release, he penned the essay we know as Civil Disobedience. That essay inspired many others, like Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., many others who found courage in his writing to stick up for the truth, for some of them even sticking up for God and listening to that voice, instead of a human voice they thought would cause them to violate their conscience, violate their faith. So when we think of civil disobedience, we often think of standing up to the human, secular government authorities. And that's partially true. I will say, if we're not careful with that line of thought, we might only want to resist when it's the people we don't like who are in power. When our team isn't in charge, we can notice every abuse. And when our team is in charge, we can sometimes be softer. In fact, I have a theory. You can tell me if you agree with this theory or not. I think that you can tell a person's current stance on those in charge by how many syllables they use when they say this word. Now, when things are going fine, it's the government. Three neat syllables. But when we're fed up and we're good Texans, what do we say? The government. Maybe we could be a little more consistent at times. And if you strip away all the partisan labels and just list actions of human governments through the years, you can find a list of ways that they might have intentionally or unintentionally asked people of faith to violate their conscience. I have a list, you might have your own, and they might look similar or different, that's okay. The point is, the call to obey God and not humans cuts across the aisle. And by the way, Scripture is clear about ways we are to live under authority. Paul tells us to submit to governing authorities because they're put there by God. He tells us to pray for those in power, and he tells us to live at peace with everyone as far as it depends upon us. Those are all absolutely true. Scripture also tells us about Daniel, who gets hired to work in the Babylonian administration, and he's told he's supposed to pray to Babylon's God, and he won't do it. And he prays only to his God, and he gets in some trouble. Now, I was at an event recently. We were kind of talking about this dynamic, and someone said, well, you know, Daniel had some resistance, but I mean, he didn't like do anything to get himself fired. And we're all looking around like, okay, maybe he didn't get a pink slip and a month's severance, but he got thrown to the lions. I kind of think that's worse. Daniel knew what it was like to obey God rather than the humans who were telling him to pray in such a way that would violate his faith and his conscience. Now, those are the stories we think about when we read these verses like, obey God and not humans. right? People of God up against the secular or ungodly governments or authorities. Those happen sometimes. The Caesar versus Christ and government versus God times. We've seen that play out a lot. That's actually not what's happening in Acts 5. Peter is not standing in this moment against Caesar or Pilate or the Roman army or the emperor. He's standing against the high priest, against the Sanhedrin, the people in robes holding scrolls, the ones who are claiming to defend God's honor. That's not really civil disobedience, is it? That's more like religious disobedience. That's what makes Acts 5 unsettling for us. It's one thing to resist Caesar. We expect that story. It's another thing to resist the people who say that they speak for God, to look religious leaders in the eye and say, we can obey you or we can obey God, but not both. History shows us how this can happen too. J. Russell Hawkins wrote a book called The Bible Told Them So, and he studied how many Christians in the South resisted the civil rights movement. And when they did so, they weren't always quoting politicians or appealing to philosophy. They were quoting the Bible. They preached sermons. They told their congregations that all this separation was God's will. They convinced themselves that they were defending the faith. But history shows that the opposite was true. In their zeal to protect tradition, they were opposing the Spirit of God. Can you imagine sitting in church while the preacher pounds the pulpit and says, God does not want every person to vote. God himself says separate but equal. What do you do when the voice of religion is telling you to defy the work of God? That's not just a 1960s problem. It's a temptation as old as the Bible itself. And again, God moves in new ways, and religious people, sometimes convinced they're on God's side, end up resisting him. Sometimes that's big, like denomination-wide, institution-wide, society-wide. It's big kinds of moments. Sometimes it's smaller and more personal. It's people who say, you know, if your preacher or church doesn't say exactly what I think they should say about this hot button moment in society, you should find a new church. And that one's frustrating because the people saying it often have no idea what it's like to lead a church or to try to shepherd a diverse body of believers or to listen carefully to the Spirit rather than just parroting some latest talking point. But that kind of pressure, say what I want or else, is its own way of trying to control the message of God. But for all of us, Peter's words leave us with a choice. Whose voice do we obey? It's easy to obey God when it earns us applause. The real test comes when obedience unsettles the very people we thought would cheer us on. That's when faith requires courage. So let's ask some questions of ourselves. On a personal level, where in your life are you silencing God's call because it might upset others? On a broader level, are we about protecting ourselves from threats or making room for God's Spirit to work? When the voices around us grow loud, will we obey them or will we obey God? History tells us that these are not just theoretical choices. The church and people of God have faced them before. We've had to decide to obey God or the status quo when it came to so many issues where we receive pressure, from all sides, from all perspectives. And sometimes the most stubborn resistance did not come from atheists or secular governments. It came from religious voices who were certain they were defending God's honor. Now, for most of us, we're not going to find an epic moment where we give like a brave heart speech and defy the big bad powers. For most of us, it's smaller, everyday things. When I'm at work and everyone's talking about others in some unethical, unchristlike way, will I obey God or go along and obey others? When I'm at school and my friends at the lunch table are speaking about others and excluding them, and there's all this pressure to go along, will I obey God or will I obey humans? When we're watching the news or listening to a podcast or spending time on YouTube, and someone tells us that half the country is our enemy instead of people made in the image of God, when they tell us that we should only view those people as enemies to be defeated, will we obey God or will we obey humans? When any kind of religious voice tells us to silence those threats or it's us against them, will we obey God or will we obey humans? You and I will face these kinds of choices, sometimes in big ways, sometimes in small ways. Obeying God and not humans might mean speaking grace when others are demanding exclusion, or showing compassion when others demand judgment, naming truth when silence would be safer. It might mean sticking with Scripture's teaching when others are calling you to get on board with something else. It might mean holding firm when the Spirit calls you to step out, even if it costs approval. Disobedience is costly. For Daniel, it meant lions. For the apostles, it meant beatings and imprisonment. For others throughout history, it's meant ridicule and exile, sometimes even death. But obedience to God carries a promise. You will never obey alone. The Spirit is right there with you, just as it was with Daniel, just as it was with the apostles who looked those leaders in the eye and said, "We have got to obey God and not you." The Spirit is right there with you when your faith calls you to say, "I must obey God." So if a voice, civic or religious, tells you to keep people out or draw lines or stop talking about Jesus or soften God's commands, may you have the courage to obey God and not humans. Because in the end, the safest place to stand is not with the approval of human beings. It is in obedience to God. Let's be standing.